Can we possibly get a combined 6 Game 7s in the NBA and NHL? The second round is close to wrapping up as the drama builds heading into the weekend. I'll recap all the latest. Plus, can we get rid of the NFL schedule release? Who will win the second golf major of the year? Will Mystic Dan win the Preakness? And is anyone paying attention to Major League Baseball? I'll have an answer to all the above and then some as the latest podcast is forthcoming. It's all coming up, but first, these messages. I'm elated and honored to welcome in a new partnership here on the podcast. Are you familiar with Olipop Soda? If you're not, well, listen up. I haven't been a soda drinker for quite some time, but when I discovered Olipop and what they're all about, I was all in. Not only is it a prebiotic soda that's good for your gut, it's non-GMO, organic, with ingredients that you can actually read. That's right. No 12 or 14 letter words that you can't pronounce. And are you worried about the dreaded high fructose corn syrup? Not here, as there's very little sugar, 4 grams per serving. And then the flavors? You have vintage cola, orange squeeze, my favorite, tropical punch, banana cream, what? Plus the classics such as root beer, lemon lime, and ginger ale, which has a better taste. How could I forget the taste? Crisp, refreshing, without feeling bloated afterward, than the usual brands that you're familiar with. Right now, you can get 15% off at checkout when you use the code SODALOVE, and I'll get a percentage of that based on your purchase. It's a win-win for both of us. Please go to drinkolipop.com and use SODALOVE for 15% off at checkout. Thanks to the good people at Olipop, and an early thank you for shopping at drinkolipop.com. J-Reels here to spend a brief moment and share a friendly reminder to please subscribe, rate, review the podcast on whichever platform you listen to on the regular, just so we can increase the visibility of the J-Reels podcast to those who aren't familiar with it. Leave plenty of stars, write a favorable review. It will go a long way for the curious listener looking to hop on board to get a dose of entertaining and passionate sports talk. For the visually inclined, please subscribe to my YouTube channel at J-Reels as I post daily shorts and weekly vlogs, not only delving into the world of sports, but follow me on my journey to take the podcast and channel to new heights as I provide an in-depth behind-the-scenes look at what it takes for yours truly to produce content on a day-in, day-out, week-in, week-out basis. It goes without saying how much I truly appreciate all of your support. And without further ado, the J-Reels podcast begins in 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. Let's get this sports podcast party started, all right?
The J-Reels Podcast.
Why don't you wait until July 1st to make an announcement? What a disgrace. He can rack up all these numbers in October, November, and December, but what really counts is let me see this in January.
The sports rebel without a pause, delivering fast-paced, jam-packed sports talk like no other.
Listen, I gotta call it as I see it. He is not a good player. I'm sick and tired of having to deal with the disappointment of this franchise. When does it stop? And yes, another winter that I can sleep in peace. Coming correct, direct, and in full effect. Let's get it.
This is the J-Reels Podcast. Welcome aboard.
What is happening, my good people? Greetings. How are you? How's it going? How's everybody doing out there? What is the latest and greatest? Hope everybody's doing well, feeling fantastic, in excellent spirits. Your boy is back in front of the microphone, ready to get all of what's happening in sports off my chest, as this is the J-Reels Podcast with your host, J-Reels. For my first timers, welcome aboard. And for those who've been banging with me, going back to the very beginning, somewhere in the middle, or even as early as this past Monday, I welcome you guys and gals back. And as we get that much closer to Memorial Day weekend, no, not this coming weekend, but the following one, the unofficial beginning of summer. And even though it's dreary here in New York, 60 degrees, been cloudy, rainy the last couple of days, it's either London West or Seattle East, but nobody wants to hear that right now. Everybody wants to know J-Reel's thoughts, or yours truly, to expound on what's going on and the theme heading into this weekend. And I get it, as a sports fan, we could be as optimistic as possible. We can look at the landscape in both the Stanley Cup playoffs, of course, the National Hockey League, as well as what's happening in the association. And when we look at the first round, we only had one Game 7 in the NBA, and we had, what, two Game 7s in the NHL? Off the top of my head, maybe even one, for that matter. I have to really massage that to think, but not a lot of drama in the opening round, where here, who knows what could lie ahead over the next few days, heading into next week, as we get closer to concluding the conference semifinals. And I'll start with the NBA, because I'll save the Celtics for last. Obviously, they're the only team that has advanced to the Eastern Conference Finals 3 straight years, 6 of the last 8 years, and a lot to be said about them. a little bit later on. But with the association, you have a game six tonight in Minnesota. And boy, has that series turned. You'll have two game sixes tomorrow where the Knicks will see if they could get a win in Indiana, which they were unable to do last weekend, as well as the Oklahoma City Thunder, who now they're back on the ropes, considering what has transpired here from Monday's game where Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, with the 34-point performance and a big fourth quarter in game number three, but then falls short there last night, game number four, and then falls short last night in OKC in their building to where Luka Doncic had a triple-double. So you're going to have a game six where they have to go to Dallas to save their season. And then to round it all up in the NBA, you're going to have to see whether or not you'll have Minnesota push it to a game seven, Indiana push it to a game seven, and Oklahoma City push it to a game seven. So those are the three right off the bat. And then with the NHL scenario tonight where you have the Rangers up 3-0 in their series, and for them to lose two in a row where they have to go back to Carolina to see whether or not they could push it to a game seven back to Madison Square Garden to be one of those teams to come back from an 0-3 hole. And we've seen that in the NHL. We have not seen that in the NBA, as we know. Then you also have a scenario where the Dallas Stars last night were unable to get the gentleman's sweep, considering that they had that 3-0 lead in game one before losing in overtime and then winning the next three games, going back to their building, and then falling short where they have to go back to the Rocky Mountains for a game number six. Now you have Edmonton and Vancouver. Now they've only played four games, so we don't know whether or not that's going to be a seven-game series, but what we do know, it's going to go at least six, so we'll talk about that in a minute. But then you also have the scenario where the Boston Bruins staved off elimination down 3-1, having to go to Florida, and then they were able to survive and now go back to Beantown, still trailing, but maybe they could put a little bit of that reverse from what happened last year where they had a 3-1 series lead in the opening round to see whether or not that they could at least push it to a game seven. So that's what we have. Those three series in the NBA and the three series in the NHL, that's going to be the theme going into the weekend. And how I look at it, we'd be lucky to at least get three game sevens. Now, I don't know where they're going to come from. I don't know if you're going to get three in one sport and none in the other, or if you're going to get two in the NBA, one in the NHL, one in the NBA, two in the NHL. Who knows? I couldn't tell you what the combination is going to be, but as I look into my crystal ball and try to figure out how this is going to go, and we'll take a look at these series right now, starting tonight with Denver and Minnesota in the association as I lace up my high tops and get squeaking on the hardwood. For the Nuggets, look what they've done here over the last three games. Down 0-2, a lot of people pretty much started to throw dirt on them, and rightfully so, considering the T-Wolves had swept the Suns and then won the first two games in Denver, to where, as we talked about on Monday, how the Nuggets came roaring back and in a game five in their building were just phenomenal. And led by the MVP in Nikola Jokic, 40 points, 13 rebounds, 7 assists, with all kinds of shots from all over the court. Three-pointers, the high-arcing rainbow threes that he shoots, hook shots, fake moves, passes in the lane. The guy was able to do it all and now put his team on the precipice of another conference final where the T-Wolves, a lot of people thought that maybe they'd be able to go back to Denver considering they won the first two games of that series and steal another victory so they could go home and see if they could dethrone the defending champs. But now it's a scenario where they are on their heels. I get it that they're going back to their home crowd, but there may be a little bit of doubt because Denver now is on a mission, it seems, as they've steamrolled the T-Wolves over the last three games. And you would think that maybe the confidence is shook a little bit. Rudy Gobert, who I get it, maybe he's getting a little bit too much blame, although he did not play well in Game 5 against Jokic. But again, he is the MVP. It doesn't matter who you put there. You could put Dikembe Mutombo. You could put Hakeem Olajuwon. You could put Dennis Rodman. It doesn't matter. Jokic right now is on another level with his offensive performance. And knowing that his team is that much closer to wrapping up this series, he's going to do whatever it takes. So for the T-Wolves, they have to have a better output from Karl-Anthony Towns as well as Anthony Edwards. And I understand you can't put it all on him, or you certainly can't indict him for what happened there in Game 5. But now with Denver, knowing that they're this close, and I'm sure they want to have at least another day or two off before they play in a conference final, I would think this is going to be tough sledding for the T-Wolves. Would I be shocked if Minnesota wins? Absolutely not. But I would think that the Nuggets could smell it here because of what happened early on in the series and avoiding Jamal Murray being suspended for his antics there in game two. And as I mentioned last week, check those receipts. A week ago today with the long layoff. Remember, game two was last Monday and game three in Minnesota was Friday. And I knew that that was going to bode well for the Nuggets because having those extra days to regroup, to get away from basketball, they're a championship team as we know, and for them to regroup and get back on the beam there Friday and even Sunday with those two wins and then, of course, what you saw there on Tuesday night now has to really make you wonder whether or not the T-Wolves are going to be able to overcome that. And I don't know if they're going to. So I would think Denver will pretty much close out their series tonight in Minnesota and move on to another conference final. Now, as far as the game tomorrow night where the Knicks and the Pacers, what you saw there on Tuesday night was a carbon copy of what the Pacers did to the Knicks there in game four. And no surprise, Jalen Brunson, 44 points, 28 points in the first half. Obviously, a very chippy game if you saw Dante DiVincenzo with Miles Turner and TJ McConnell going at it as well. And the Pacers had no shot when you had that guarding crowd behind them and the Knicks played from in front pretty much the whole night. And even though there was a stretch there where Miles Turner made, what, three straight threes to cut a lead from 16 to 7 at 70-63, and then all of a sudden the Pacers went to sleep. The Knicks went on a long run, I believe it was 17-0 run, a 9-minute stretch where the Pacers didn't score, and that was your game. So now they have to go back to the drawing board for a game six tomorrow night. And you would think that the Pacers will bounce back, they'll rebound. But I don't think tomorrow night's game is going to be anything what we saw in game four or even game five for that matter, although that was in the Knicks' favor. How I look at it is that this is going to be what we saw last Friday night where it was tooth and nail, back and forth. You had the Andrew Nembhard three, which sealed the game. I think it's going to be a white knuckler come tomorrow night. Who wins? Maybe the Pacers will gut it out considering that they have not lost at home so far in this postseason. And yes, you could say that they're due to lose a game in their building. That is a coin flip. So for this series, I think it's going to go to a seventh game. Why not? It's going to be all home court. I think the Knicks will prevail. I did say the Knicks will win in seven. So would I be shocked if the Knicks win in Indiana? Absolutely not. Maybe they'll find a way. And I think having the extra day off helps them because it gives them another day to mend, especially with Brunson with his injuries. And I don't know if you're going to see OG Anunoby or any of the other guys that have been out. Obviously not Julius Randle or even Bojan Bogdanovic, but it does give them an extra day. And yes, they do have to travel, etc. And we know that the Pacer crowd is going to be up and raring to go. But I think this will help the Knicks to at least be in a closer game, similar to what we saw there in Game 3. And I do think in my gut, the Pacers will win. I think the Knicks can win, absolutely. And would I be shocked? Absolutely not. But I could see this going to a seventh game, as we've seen with Pacers-Knicks in the past, whether it was in the 90s or even in the early 2000s, more so in the 90s, because the last time they played was in 2000. And of course, I know in 2013, that Carmelo year, the block Roy Hibbert on Carmelo, that was a six-game series. But I could see this being pushed to the brink and the Knicks will prevail there Sunday, which I believe the game will be at 3:30 in the afternoon. So there'll be a quick turnaround with travel, unlike last week, where you had game three Friday night in Indiana and then game four Sunday afternoon in that same venue. And then as far as OKC and Dallas, I'm very disappointed in the Thunder. Based on what we saw there Monday night, as they were trailing by as many as 8 in the fourth quarter, and Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, let me say that one more time, or I should just say SGA, he put on a stupendous performance, again, a runner-up of the MVP, worthy of being an MVP, but of course, we just talked about Nikola Jokic and how great he's been. But for the Thunder, a game that they absolutely had to have, they did not want to go down 3-1, even going back to their building, and they were able to pull it out. Now, Dallas was terrible with free throws down the stretch. Kyrie only had 9 points, was invisible. And for Dallas, who we've seen in that spot in the previous round against the Clippers, lose a game 4 in their building. And I thought at that point, you gave the Thunder life. Now, understood that they're a young team, young coach, and they don't know their way around the deep end of a pool, where Dallas does. Kyrie, of course, in his days with Cleveland, making it to the finals, making one of the biggest shots in NBA history, as we saw against Golden State in 2016. And then Luka, who has been to a conference final just 2 years ago, even though a little bit of a different cast of characters, but still, they're winning players. And Jason Kidd is their head coach, so he knows his way around winning, won a title with that same franchise, what was it, a Baker's dozen years ago. And for now Dallas to go into OKC last night, and for Luka to put up a triple-double, and a big contribution by Derrick Jones Jr., 7-for-9 from the field, 19 points. Kyrie did not have a big game, only 11 points. PJ Washington chipped in as well. And for whatever the reason, Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, although put up 30, but the rest of the team didn't do much. Josh Giddey got demoted, where Isaiah Joe got promoted to the shooting guard position. And Giddey was a guy that a lot of people thought was a very good, not necessarily a two player, maybe a two-way or at least a bona fide three when it comes to your rotation as far as guys that will make contributions on the offensive end. And this guy's been invisible. And we understand that early in the year he had all those accusations about the relationship he had with a minor, but that was a long time ago. So why would that affect them here this go-around, especially in the second round of a postseason, for them to all of a sudden be rattled or maybe starting to shrink here in this spot where Kyrie knows how to play on a big stage and Luka knows how to play in big games? And I just talked about the head coach, Jason Kidd, as well. Maybe this is the point where now Dallas, they could sense it. And with the series going back to Dallas tomorrow night, and it's weird because I believe they do play tomorrow night, and then game seven, if it were to be, is on Monday. So you're not going to have a game seven scenario where it's Friday and then game seven will be Sunday. So the Mavericks, I'm sure they've learned from the previous series when they blew out the Clippers, and I get it that the Clippers were a mess. No Kawhi, Paul George, and James Harden cannot be trusted. So I would think that they know that this young team, although maybe they'll have a game four reawakening to where they were able to win down the stretch, and that would be an indictment more so on Dallas than it would be on the Thunder, although you'd have to give them credit. But I could see this being a scenario where Dallas is not going to fool around. It's in their building. They do not want to give any more life to them than they already did in game four when they went back to OKC even at two. So I would think tomorrow night, could I see Oklahoma City winning the game? Absolutely. But I think Dallas, with their know-how, and I would think they're still going to get some contributions, whether it be from guys like PJ Washington or Tim Hardaway Jr. or even Derrick Jones, who we haven't really seen in this series. So I don't know if I can expect a repeat performance coming from Jones Jr. But Kyrie, I would think that he's going to step up his game considering his offensive output has been minimal over the last two games. And Luka, as I said on Monday, he's being put together with scotch tape, bubblegum, and spit. But that just shows the type of will and mental toughness that he has, that no matter how injured or how hurt he is, he's going to find a way. And that may be tough for a young Oklahoma City team to overcome, considering that they were a one seed, the youngest team to be a one seed in quite some time, and obviously no guarantee that it's going to be a cakewalk to a conference final. I can see Dallas winning tomorrow night. And you know what? I think they will. Because unless Shai Gilgeous-Alexander has another one of those 35-9-9 games, and then you're going to have contributions, whether it be from Chet Holmgren or Jalen Williams or even a guy like Lu Dort, who, as we all know, is more of a defensive player, but every now and again he can chip in offensively. They're going to need some big-time performances other than SGA in order for them to get back to OKC to a seventh game. And then to wrap it up, the Celtics. Now, after that scare in Game 2, unlike the previous series where the Heat shot the hell out of the ball and from three, losing by 24 at home certainly made you scratch your head. But without Donovan Mitchell, without Jared Allen, and even without last night Caris LeVert, now LeVert did play in Games 3 and 4. Evan Mobley did show you a side that he was able to carry the team, especially in last night's game. But the games in Cleveland, we talked about Game 3 on Monday, but for the Celtics to win Game 3 the way they did, now it did come down to a big shot there by Jason Tatum, who finally has awoken from his early playoff slumber. And for him, he's going to be huge here, especially as we get deeper into this postseason. But when you get a big-time contribution from Al Horford last night, who put up just astonishing numbers, and I know that the rest is going to be well-needed for him because he's the one that's picking up the slack from Kristaps Porzingis. I know Luke Kornet is also trying to do his best, but for Horford, who's 37 years of age, and you saw the numbers that he put up there last night in a closeout game against the Cavs, and then going back to Tatum, I know that shot there at 102-97 there in the fourth quarter where it looked like the Cavs were going to cut it to a one-possession game, and he made that three to make it an eight-point lead, and the Celtics went to cruise 109-102 in game four. But then last night, again, with Horford and what he did, he was just absolutely, I mean, what more can you say? For a guy that's 37 years of age to put a contribution like that where he made a bunch of threes, he scored, 25 points in the game, and you can't expect that a lot from him. And especially when Porzingis comes back, he's going to be that safety net as another guy that you know could also add not only just defense and rebounding, but also add those threes, especially when he's hot. And we get it that the Celtics, they're going to shoot the lights out of the three in order for them to win these games. And there are nights when they're cold, they're probably not going to win the game. But for the Celtics, it's all right in front of them. I'm sure they're hoping for the Knicks and Pacers to go seven games. I'm sure they want it to be a knockdown, dragdown, heavyweight fight, so they'll be running on fumes going into the next round. And if it does go to a seventh game, you would think game one would be Tuesday night between the either Celtics or Pacers against the, or I should say Celtics versus the Knicks or Pacers, excuse me. But for Boston, again, they're going to be graded on what they do from here on out. Yes, they could dispose of the Cavs, who didn't have their best players. Yes, they could dispose of even the Heat, who in their own right didn't have their best player in one Jimmy Butler. But now, whether it be Indiana or New York, and I'm hoping it's the Knicks, not that I'm hoping in the sense that, yeah, bring on the Knicks, I want all the smoke. I think that would be more of an intriguing series because it's New York, Boston, the gutty grittiness of the Knicks going up against the Celtics. I don't want to say they're high-flying, but of course, with the best record in the sport, and we know the rivalry between New York and Boston doesn't matter what sport it is. So for, and Horford had 22 points last night. I know I said 25 and shot, 6 for 13 from three. But for the NBA, you know they want New York and Boston. They don't want New York, Boston and Indiana. They do not want that. Although that would also be an intriguing series, more from a Celtic defensive standpoint because they got the young guns there and they could give the Knicks trouble with guys like Tyrese Halliburton, even Miles Turner with his size. And they have some gutty players from the standpoint of the Andrew Nembhards of the world, even the Aaron Nesmith, the former Celtic, I might add. But I think New York and Boston would be just even that much more appealing, that much more intriguing for the NBA fan, even for the sports fan who's not a basketball fan. They'd want to see New York and Boston. So we'll wait and see what's going to happen there. And that's what I have there with the NBA. Before I turn my attention, let me see what else is happening. Do I have any other notes in the association? No, that's about it. Let me turn my attention now to the ice as I lace up my skates. And now as we go through the potential Game 7 starting tonight with the Rangers and Carolina, and what could you say? Now the Rangers, okay, Carolina did get the one game where they had a lead and the Rangers tied before Brady Shea hit that power play goal there with about 3 minutes to go in game number four. But after Jacob Trouba scored a shorthanded goal in the first period, and you're thinking to yourself, oh no, if they're going to score shorthanded and if the Rangers get on a power play, forget about it. They're just going to blow the doors off of the Hurricanes. But as it was, they nursed a 1-0 lead into the third period, and then all of a sudden the goal started to come for the Hurricanes to the point where they scored three goals, added an empty netter late, and pretty much stood within their task of playing their way. They didn't panic. They didn't try to force things. It was only a one-goal lead. But as we know, as the time starts to tick, as you get into the third period and you start to press a little bit and you maybe start to think a little bit too much, but Carolina did stay the course and were able to get those three goals. And now you have a scenario where the Rangers have to go to Carolina tonight. And I'm sure that building is going to be raucous. They're going to try to will their team to a Game 7 at Madison Square Garden, which will be Saturday night, I believe. And yeah, I think it would be Saturday night because if it were to be a Game 7 for the Knicks, that'd be on Sunday. But for the Rangers, I think tonight, I think you're going to win the game. I'm sure the extra day, because remember, they played on Monday, so they had an extra day here to kind of rethink things, to even regroup for them. And I really, truly believe that Igor Shesterkin, who right now has to be the Conn Smythe Trophy in the lead, if that were to be the case, only what? Not even two rounds into this postseason. But I think Shesterkin's going to have a big game in front of him. I don't know what's going to happen with Frederik Andersen. I know they've flip-flopped their goalies here over the last couple of games, but I would think the Rangers are going to step up here. The Hurricanes, even if they played from in front, and I know that would help them, but I think the Rangers, I think they would even take a page from what Carolina did. They would stay the course. Now, again, if they go up 2-0 or 3-0 Carolina, then I could see the Rangers pressing and being a little bit more tighter. But a 1-0 lead or even a 2-1 lead going into the third period for Carolina, I don't think that's going to be an automatic. I think that the Carolina Panthers, or excuse me, the Hurricanes, if they're going to play from in front, they have to be minimum 2 goals ahead and stay out of the penalty box. Keep it 5-on-5, as we know. But I would think that a lot of people, not to say that they're starting to throw dirt on the Rangers or the pressure is mounting, and maybe the pressure is starting to mount a little bit, but because they're on the road, I really think that the Rangers, they're going to have that type of game that we saw 2 years ago, if you recall, in the same scenario, conference semifinals, when it was a home ice series where Carolina had the home ice. They won their first 2 games in their building. Then the Rangers won the 2 at Madison Square. In Raleigh, Carolina won game 5. Back to the Garden, Rangers win game 6. And then what did you see in game 7? The Rangers shut out the Hurricanes. Now, I'm not expecting a 4-0 shutout that we saw in game 7 2 years ago, but I could see the Rangers come out strong, maybe get a couple goal lead early. Carolina starts to crawl back, but then the Rangers put it away in the third. And then the next thing you know, all this was for naught, Ranger fans, where I'm sure right now your fingernails are starting to get close to the nub, wondering whether or not that this series is going to be a game 7 in your building, where I'm sure the fan base is going to be tight as a drum. So I think the Rangers will prevail there. Then you had, as I mentioned, with Dallas and Colorado, and it's weird with Dallas. Here they were, they lost the first 2 games at home against the Colorado Avalanche, against the Vegas Golden Knights in the first round, and then they had to come all the way back to take a 3-2 series lead. They lose in Vegas before winning a game 7 in their building. All right, fine. Now they lose game 1, where they were up 3-0, as we know, lose in overtime. Then they pretty much have steamrolled at that point, winning games 2 in their building, just dominating games 3 and 4 in Colorado. Now they come home to set themselves up for a coronation. And what happens? Cale Makar scores 2 goals. Casey Mittelstadt in the third period breaks a tie, which actually was Colorado's first lead. Now this is in the third period of yesterday's game 5, their first lead since winning game 1 in overtime. That's how good Dallas has played. And then the Stars were unable to get the equalizer there, as they had a 4-3 lead, and then they added another goal later on, as we know. And now Colorado has some life in them. Now, Dallas, I'm sure they're not going to be afraid to know that they won the 2 games in Colorado. But then you could say that the Avalanche are due to win a game in their building and push it to a 7th game. And would I be surprised? Absolutely not. Because Dallas, from 1 game to the next, you don't even know what you're going to get. I mean, think about it. All right, so they got the equalizer there in game 2. So you're probably thinking, all right, well, if they take 1 game in Colorado, then at least they'll come home 2-2. No, they won 4-1 and 5-1. So you're thinking, oh, wait a minute. Not to say that this is going to be easy pickings, but you would have thought that Dallas, 1 seed, top of the West all year, that they would have taken care of business, and they did not. So I don't know what to expect here in this game 6 come what, Saturday? Or come tomorrow night, Friday night? So how I look at it is that would I be shocked if Dallas loses? Absolutely not. Do I think they're going to lose? I don't think they will. I think they'll continue winning, and maybe they'll look at it like, hey, we won the 2 games in this building. We fooled around here. Maybe they didn't. I'm sure they didn't do that with any intent. But my point is that we had a chance to win at home. Let's not push it to a game 7. We know that we can rely on our home crowd based on the previous series. But the last thing they want to do is get into another game 7 scenario in their building, because Colorado obviously has the firepower. They certainly have the players and the game breakers that could make an impact, and next thing you know, Dallas will go home. And remember, they were up 3-1 in this series, and I'm sure the last thing they want is to play another Game 7 in their building. But Colorado, I think that they'll look at those 2 games and certainly try to change their reversal of fortune, but I think Dallas, I don't know, I could see them just winning another game in that building and then push it to a conference final. And then you have to go back in the East with Florida and Boston. And this is a strange series. Jeremy Swayman, who had to stand on his head there the other night, where you're going to have a scenario, they'll play game six tomorrow, so there's going to be an extra day off, which maybe bodes well for Boston. Who knows if Brad Marchand will be back in the lineup. But for Florida, I think they're going to be fine here, even with the extra day off. That will help Boston. Now remember, not only did they win the two games in Boston, but think about this, people. Going back to last year, they have won five straight games in that building. They won game two in the opening round. They won game five and they won game seven. And they also won games three and four in this series. So why would they feel intimidated or be daunted to go in that building and think that they can't win? Now, I get it. You could say the flip side of that. Well, the Bruins are due to win a game against Florida in their building. 100%. But for the Panthers, even with that tough loss there the other night, and for the Bruins to overcome that tough loss in game four where the goal was allowed there by the Panthers, Sam Bennett in the crease, I can see the Bruins snapping this out and pushing it to a game seven. Now, I did pick Panthers in six. I would not be shocked if they win in Boston to close out the series there on Friday. But you know what? I think the hockey gods may be looking on the Bruins side here, especially if you're going to get a Brad Marchand return, a la, dare I say, in these parts, a Willis Reed. He'll probably be a game-time decision. Who knows if he even skates during warm-ups come tomorrow night. But I can see this being pushed to seven. I'm going to stick with my pick, Panthers in six. But I think for the hockey fan and even for the sports fan like myself, I would love to see this being pushed to the brink, because maybe the hockey gods will have something in store for the Panthers similar to what they had for the Bruins there last year. And wouldn't that be something if that would be the case? But I think the Panthers will win overall. And again, I wouldn't be shocked if they win tomorrow night. And then the final series, which hasn't even gone to a fifth game yet, is Edmonton and Vancouver. And they've had to switch their goalies from Skinner to Picard. And now they have to wonder whether or not they could get another game in Vancouver, which they did in game two. But that's not going to guarantee anything, because they did lose a game three in their building to Vancouver and just a lackluster effort after scoring the opening goal. But give it up for Edmonton. They did bounce back to win game four. And how I look at this series, at this point, I would think Vancouver is going to pull it off. I wouldn't be shocked if they win tonight and even win a game six in Edmonton, because they are a Jekyll and Hyde team. Edmonton could either win 5-2 tonight, or they'll lose a nail biter. And then even if they win 5-2 tonight, they'll stink up the joint in their own building before going back to Vancouver for a game seven. They're very unpredictable. And we understand they have some of the top players in the sport. You could argue two of the top. Well, McDavid, we know he's probably number one on the list, no matter who wins the MVP this year. Leon Draisaitl has to be, I would think, top five, top seven. And then you want to look at Zach Hyman, especially in this postseason and what he's done. Ryan Nugent-Hopkins, I can say that three times. Ryan Nugent-Hopkins, a guy who, of course, as we all know, former number one overall. He's a guy that also contributes. Evan Bouchard. I mean, they have a very good offensive team. And even Evander Kane, who could be, you know, is underrated, but a guy who has been here invisible as of late. They do have the players, but we all know the goaltending and their defense is suspect. I'm rooting for Edmonton. Hopefully they win it in six. They'll win the next two games and not fool around. But I could see Vancouver winning here in six games. Could it be pushed to a seventh game? I think it could, but it's all based on what Edmonton does, not more so what Vancouver does. So how I look at it is, as we wrap this all up, I could see a game seven going NBA and NHL. Game seven, Knicks Pacers. I don't see a game seven, Denver, Minnesota. I could see a game seven with Dallas and OKC, but I don't. NHL, I could see a game seven, Florida and Boston, only because the Bruins are due to win in that building against Florida. And to think, could they lose six straight games to the Panthers in the last 2 years in their building? I mean, seriously? I can see the Rangers winning tonight, so I don't see a Game 7 there. And I don't see a Game 7 with Edmonton and Vancouver. I could see a Game 7 between Dallas and Colorado. So out of the six, I won't even include Edmonton and Vancouver, because they're still in a deadlocked at two, although it could go seven games. But I'm going to say you're going to get two Game 7s, one in each sport. Hopefully you get more. Hopefully I'm wrong. I would love to see six game sevens, even seven if Edmonton and Vancouver could do so. So that's what I have there with the NHL. Fascinated to see what's going to take place over the weekend as we head into next week, where we get now past the first two rounds and into the conference finals. So you know your boy Jay Reels will be on top of that. All right, let me pivot before I even get to anything else with the baseball, which is not much to talk about, and I'll get into that in a minute. Obviously, there's a lot of things to discuss. I'm going to get the golf out of the way now, which is already underway at Valhalla in Louisville, Kentucky. The PGA, the second leg of the Grand Slam. As we know, the PGA used to be played in August, which I kind of wish they would go back to that, because think about this. Before you even hit Memorial Day, two of the four golf majors are already in the books. And now the PGA already teed off where Tiger, let's see what he does. Tiger is already, and I'll go through, let's see if I go through a little bit of a scoreboard here in a little bit. So for this go around, Brooks Koepka, a guy who's won this tournament several times, and I believe won last year. So he would be one of the favorites. Of course, you can look at Scottie Scheffler, Rory McIlroy for what he did at the Wells Fargo just this past weekend. I understand Wells Fargo is no big deal. It's not a major. It's just another tournament. He won it for a record four straight times. So a lot of people are thinking that Rory McIlroy could be the guy that could come away with the long-awaited major. He hasn't won a major in 10 years, as we know. So that's another person that we could maybe hang our hat on for, a guy with some momentum coming into this tournament. John Rahm, as we all know, he's a guy that could win on any given day. And we could look at some of the other guys, that the big names that we know that can maybe sneak in. And the guys that always seem to be at the top of the leaderboard after the first couple of days, whether it's Tommy Fleetwood, whether it's Lee Westwood, Colin Morikawa. I mean, we have so many players. And that's the great thing about the sport, is that you just don't have... Yeah, you have your two or three dominant players, the Cam Smiths, the aforementioned John Rahm, Scottie Scheffler, etc. But who's going to be the other guy that's going to step up? Who's going to be the other guy that's going to be at the top of the leaderboard come Sunday that can make an impact and maybe have a run in them, considering what we saw last month at the Masters? There was not a lot of drama. Yes, going into the final round, where there were players that were a stroke or two behind before Scottie Scheffler ran away and other guys fell back to the pack. I'm not going to say Scottie Scheffler only because he won the Masters, and to win back-to-back is very tough, very tricky. And I would think another big-time player will win. And remember last year when you looked at the U.S. Open and even the Open, where you had guys come out of nowhere to win those tournaments, whether your name is Brian Harman for the Open Championship, the British, of course, as it was known. And then your U.S. Open winner, I know his name is eluding me right now, but he wasn't a household name, a guy that pretty much snuck up from behind and won the tournament there out in L.A. How I look at it is, I wouldn't be surprised if you see Brooks Koepka win it. I don't think Rory, for whatever the reason, although a lot of the fans want to see him win, but I wouldn't be a guy that's going to put my money on him. And I understand the tournament's already begun. Could I see a Cam Smith? Could I see any of those other guys be at the top of the leaderboard? And let me see what I can pull up here so far when it comes to the tournament. Now, they just got started, so it's not as if it's a thing where there's going to be guys already in the clubhouse, already finishing the first round. So let's see if I can pull this up here real quick. I know I saw a highlight of Tiger earlier, which was good. And yeah, Rory's insisting that his time for a fifth major isn't running out. Right now, currently, you have Xander Schauffele. He's another guy that also was neck and neck with McIlroy at the Wells Fargo over the weekend. Right now, he is currently after eight holes. No, excuse me. He's on 15, 8 under. Tony Finau is tied number 2 with, let me just double check that, with Robert McIntyre. You also have Ben Coles. So you have guys that are making their way. It's still very early here, people. I know at the top or near the top, Hideki Matsuyama, Jordan Spieth, Cameron Smith. So those are some of the guys there. I think when it's all said and done, I think it's going to be a combination of Koepka, Cameron Smith. I'll say Xander Schauffele, just based on, and he's always been good in these tournaments. He hasn't been able to seal the deal, whether it's at the Masters or maybe even in this setting here. Excuse me, but I'm going to say it's easy to go Koepka. And it's easy to say Shoffley because he's in the lead right now, so I don't even want to go there. I'll say Cam Smith will be the guy that's going to win the PGA here. As my gut tells me, and he's the guy that won the British a couple of years ago, so I think he's going to get back on the beam to win another major, and I'm going to pick him to win this go around. All right, now let me shift gears as I put my clubs away. I know I can get into it more. I don't know how the weather's going to be. I think the weather would be nice, much better than the Northeast, as I mentioned at the very top. And I don't even know how the golf course plays. I don't know how Valhalla, if it has a lot of peaks, valleys, dog legs, things of that nature. So we'll certainly keep my eyes. I'll keep my eyes on that and get my fingers on the pulse throughout the course of the weekend and obviously recap that come Monday. Now, let me turn my attention to the NFLs I put on my helmet and shoulder pads because the schedule came out. And the first thing I have to say right out of the gate, people, can we do away with the schedule release? Seriously, does this have to be a primetime event? Does this have to be an unveiling of sorts? It's a schedule. It's not the NFL draft, which I understand there's a lot of pomp and circumstance going from city to city every year. They get 700,000 jammed into wherever downtown park in the NFL city that it's going to host. All right, fine. You want to do that? Fantastic. But for a schedule release, just do, as I said on my YouTube channel the other day, make like Beyonce when she releases an album in the middle of the night. So when you wake up the next morning, oh, there's the NFL schedule. Or in her case, oh, there's her new album. Can we do that, people? They should just release it at midnight. So when you wake up, or if you really are like a kid on Christmas, oh, I have to stay up till midnight because that's when the schedule is going to be released. Because you get a sense of what games are going to be played. Obviously, you're not going to know every game or your favorite team have the whole complete schedule prior to the schedule release. But give me a break. You already know who's playing Monday night, Jets and 49ers. You already know who's playing the 425 Fox game, Dallas at Cleveland, which would be Tom Brady's first game as a color commentator. The Thursday night opener, Ravens Chiefs, you found out about that last week. You knew about the Sao Paulo game the night after the opener, Green Bay and Philadelphia a month ago. You knew about the first Thursday night Amazon game, Buffalo at Miami, just a couple days ago. I mean, seriously, what do you have left? And you found out yesterday, Christmas, the two games that are going to be played, Kansas City at Pittsburgh, 1 o'clock, and then Baltimore at Houston at 4:30, which is going to be streamed on Netflix, and that's a whole other, and I talked about that on the channel yesterday. What's next? It's going to be on Tubi? It's going to be on Freevee TV? Is this thing going to be on Pluto TV or the cooking channel? I mean, this is ridiculous. I mean, this is just an absolute abomination. The two games are going to be on Netflix. So could you imagine? Here you are opening gifts and it's not 4:30 and 8 where at least maybe over dinner you can watch the games and maybe separate yourself from family. No, 1 o'clock you arrive at the family and you're looking around thinking, oh my God, the Steelers are on. What am I going to do? Hey, can we log on to your Netflix channel, you know, your Netflix account so I can watch the Steelers and Chiefs? I mean, this is what it's come to, people. And the NFL, again, they can make $4 zillion. It's still not enough for them, which is an absolute disgrace. But I digress. And if you haven't watched my vlog, let me throw in a quick plug. 7 reasons why I'm down in the NFL. I even talk about that with the streaming, etc. Go to my channel, look it up. It's about, I think, 17 minutes, whatever it is. You'll get a kick out of it. So now you have all these games, schedules, etc. And I'm not going to go through every game, people. I'm not going to go through the Thursday night because now you can flex out of those Thursday night games as you get deep into the year. We know the Sunday night games you can flex. Monday night games can be flexed. I know you have doubleheaders on Monday night, not week one, not week two. I think weeks 3, week 4, and then later on in the year, you have back-to-back Monday night doubleheader weeks. Seriously, do we really need that? Why? Just have the standalone Monday night game is fine. If it ain't broke, don't fix it. But this is the NFL. They want to jam these games down your throat. They want to suffocate you with all these games. And I understand the NFL fan, they're going to be geeked up for it because of their stupid NFL fantasy teams and their gambling. And that's what it's all about. I could care less about a Monday night where it's Tennessee at Miami, the first game at 7:30, and then at 8:15, it's San Francisco at New Orleans. Or New Orleans at San Francisco. Let me flip-flop that. I could care less. I'm a Steeler fan. Yes. Am I going to follow what's going on in those games? Absolutely. But I'm not going to be like, oh, I got to flick back and forth on both of these games. Well, I mean, the NFL, they're just out of their gourd. And the Thanksgiving games are nothing to write home about either, if you ask me. Chicago at Detroit. All right, you want Caleb Williams going up against the Lions, and we know the Lions are good. All right, fine. Then you have Giants at Dallas. Who knows what the Giants are going to be like this year? And then your night game is Miami at Green Bay. All right, you may hope for some flurries, maybe a little hot cocoa by the fireplace after you polish off your Thanksgiving meal and your apple pie or your whatever it is. But Miami at Green Bay, if that game is 20 degrees and Miami's got to go up there, that's going to be, and again, Jordan Love is not Aaron Rodgers. I get it. The NFL, oh, it's just a disaster in my eyes. And I'm sure I'm in the minority when it comes to that. But the NFL schedule, can we just release it quietly and that's it? No, the NFL have to puff out their chest. They're like Superman with unbuttoning the shirt. If you're watching on YouTube, you unbutton the shirt and you pull it open and you see the NFL shield right there that is just going to barge their way through and not give a crap about the fan. They're not going to give a crap about anything. They're just going to steamroll the competition. And when you think about it, there's no competition when it comes to TV because it's all about the NFL. Do I even need to get into anything more? So yeah, I'm not going to get into all those other schedules. I just mentioned, you know, some of these games, the first Amazon game Thursday night. And obviously, I'm not going to go through the Sunday night and Monday night schedules because they're going to flex in and out of that. So in the past, we could look at that and say, oh, it's not a great Monday night schedule or a great Thursday night schedule. The sad part is that you're not going to have any games that are going to be worthy to watch because of all these mouths you have to feed. You have to feed Amazon. You have to feed ESPN. You have to feed now Netflix on Christmas. Could you imagine? You have to feed Peacock. You have to feed Fox. You have to feed CBS. You have to feed NBC. When does it stop? And we know content is king. And all these streaming platforms are going to come right to the forefront to steal these games because you're going to get minimum 15 million people to watch an NFL game. You're not going to get 5 million to watch whatever is the hot show on TV right now. Far from it. But I digress. I'll just leave it at that. And you know what? I'll say one other thing before I get to some news and notes, because you had some signings here that I want to touch on. Have you seen the Steelers schedule? Now, the Steeler fan, I'm sure when they saw that last night, they must have just started crying in their Iron City beer. The Steelers schedule over the last half of the season, they might as well just forget about all the other games. It's the division. They saved all of the division for the Steelers. They have their bye in the middle of the year, which is fine. But and let me go through it because it is an absolute gauntlet. And the Steelers, as it is, they have the third hardest schedule in the NFL. You know the other two teams that are above them? They're in the division. Cleveland number one, Baltimore two. And Pittsburgh has the third hardest schedule, which is mind-boggling. It's just beyond mind-boggling. And the thing is, on top of all that, I would think it's probably number one because they have to play the division the latter half of the year, literally. Let's go through this real quick for my diehard Steeler fans out there. So week one, absolutely, the first 2 weeks, no shocker, even though last year they started their season at home, getting blown out by the Niners. But their first two games on the road, they're in Atlanta. That's the extra NFC road game. And then they have the Broncos, which is going to be interesting because you're going to have Russell Wilson going back to his old stomping grounds in the last 2 years. So that's going to be fascinating, to say the least. So then after that, you have Chargers, Colts, Cowboys on a Sunday night, which I was hoping that was 425 on Fox. Then you have at the Raiders, Jets at home, Giants at home, Commanders. Then after the Giant game, they have the bye, then they have the Commanders. Get ready for this stretch of games. Home to the Ravens, at Cleveland, at Cincinnati, Cleveland, at Philadelphia, at the Ravens, home to the Chiefs, home to the Bengals. Now, you tell me of a harder second half of the season in the NFL than that one. Now, I guess I'd have to go back and look at Cleveland's second half and Baltimore's second half, considering they're ahead of Pittsburgh as far as the toughest schedule in the sport. But one more time, people. After the Commanders, which is that should be week 8. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. No, that's 9. After the ninth game, Commanders. At Browns, at Bengals, Browns. Oh, excuse me. Ravens, at Browns, at Bengals, Browns, at Eagles, at Ravens, Chiefs, Bengals. Name me a tougher schedule than that. Man, that is going to be, if the Seals make the postseason, they're going to earn it, because that final seven stretch or eight stretch, I figure at 17 games, again, NFL has to be greedy to get all these games. So that's your NFL as far as the schedule goes. News and notes real quick, some signings. Antoine Winfield, your highest paid safety. Think about that. 4 years, $81 million with Tampa Bay. Jared Goff gets an extension, 4 for $212 million. So he's going to be obviously under center for the next 4 years in Detroit. Marquez Valdes-Scantling goes from Kansas City winning a Super Bowl. Let's see if he tries to do so in Buffalo as he signed a one-year deal there. And for the New York Football Giants, their 100th season in the NFL, they will be your Hard Knocks HBO for the latter part of summer to watch from early August to early September. And I'm surprised they chose, because usually those teams that have been dying the wool, whether it's the Packers, Steelers, even the Giants for that matter, they pretty much steer clear from Hard Knocks. Well, guess what? The Giants will be front and center for Hard Knocks on HBO later on this summer. And real quick, I'll stick with college because their opening schedule, as far as the big games came out, Clemson, Georgia, Miami, Florida. That's your Saturday 3:30 and 12 and 3:30. Miami, Florida is going to be on ABC, not CBS, as the SEC once had that. But we all know the contracts have now been tossed around here. So the SEC no longer is exclusive to CBS. So Clemson, Georgia, Miami, Florida. I don't know who the Saturday night game is, but Sunday night you have USC and LSU, and then you're also going to have a Monday night game. I'm sure Florida State may be part of that mix, but that is your opening schedule. Oh, you have Notre Dame, Texas A&M. Excuse me. I believe that's your Saturday night game. So one more time, Clemson, Georgia, Miami, Florida, and then Notre Dame, Texas A&M. That will lead you through Saturday, Labor Day weekend. Then you'll have LSU, USC, Sunday, and I don't know who the Monday night game is to wrap up your Labor Day weekend, which thankfully we haven't even hit Memorial Day, because the last thing I want to think about is football when it comes to games being played, because that means it's the end of summer, and therefore we're going to have to start thinking about pumpkin lattes and sweaters and boots and apple picking and things of that nature. And no, all I want to think about is sand, surf, sun, beach, cocktails, and 90-degree heat. So I'll just leave it at that. All right, so let me run through these last couple of things quick before I bid adieu. Baseball. Is anybody paying attention to Major League Baseball? To me, it's like they're off into the wilderness. Not much has gone on there, and I get it that the postseason sports in the NBA and NHL are going to be front and center, and obviously with the schedule, anything that the NFL does is going to be at the top of the food chain. But baseball right now is going through a mega quiet period. That's all there is to it. That, to me, them being lost in the sauce, and I get it, once we get past the NBA and NHL, it'll open up a little bit, and I'm sure there'll be some things that will pop up between now and then that will be at the top of my antenna. But here's your big news of the week, where Ronel Blanco, remember him? He was a guy 8 games into the Major League Baseball season, threw a no-hitter. The earliest that a no-hitter was thrown in Major League Baseball history as far as starting off the season. Well, unfortunately, he got caught with sticky stuff later on in the game. In the first inning when he was checked, nothing was there. And then in his glove in the fourth inning, one of the umps there, I believe it was Eric Bakas, found the stickiest stuff that he had ever seen or found, where Blanco now 10-game suspension, and he's going to be put on notice for the rest of the year. Obviously, they didn't catch him with sticky stuff when he threw that no-hitter, but for whatever the reason, now he's put on notice for Major League Baseball as a guy. I don't want to say he's cheating, but again, he got caught. He's got to pay his punishment. And that was your biggest news of the week, which is crazy when it comes to Major League Baseball. Because besides that, you pretty much don't have anything else. And I'm going to look at the schedule to see what has happened here. And I'm looking, Max Scherzer to the 60-day IL. Can't return until May 28th, which is actually a week from this coming Saturday. So, all right, you got that. Yankees are killing the Twins. No shock there. Although the Twins did win the season series last year, for whatever that's worth. But your schedule this weekend, let's take a peek. Yankees Twins wrap up their series today. Mets wrap up their 4-game series. And that was my bad there. Hand raised high. Mets and Phillies will play in a 4-game series, but in 2 cities because of the London series that's going to take place next month. At the end of next month, because then later on this year, one of the two teams, and I should know this, will have a 4-game series in their building and then a 3-game series, because they're playing the 4 games now, and then they're going to play the 2 games at 6, And then, of course, I'll have two more series left where one will play four in one ballpark and three in the other. 13 games between the division rivals. So that was my bad. And the Phillies have just served the Mets here big time. Mets couldn't score against Aaron Nola the other day as he threw a four-hit shutout. And then Edwin Diaz spit the bit on Monday, had a 4-2 lead there in the ninth, and then blew that to where the Mets lost 5-4 in extras. And I don't want to hear any more Tommy Trumpets or Timmy Trumpets, whatever the guy's name is, because Diaz, over the last couple of weeks, whether it was blowing a 1-1 lead, and I get it, he didn't come in a save situation, to the Cubs with Christopher Morel hitting a home run off of him. Then Randy Arozarena, with the lead, gave up a home run to him in Tampa. Now you had this scenario where he gagged with a 4-2 lead in the ninth, couldn't save the game. And with the Mets, who have not won a series going on a month. The last series, to think about this, the last series they won was in L.A. against the Dodgers. And since then, they haven't won a series. They split that series against the aforementioned Cubs. But that's as close as they've come to winning a series. And as it is, even with the two-game series, it's a four-game series, and they've already lost that. And they go to Miami this weekend. So let's see. Miami did win back-to-back games in Detroit where they won 1-0 in 10 innings, and they won in a shutout. So they've actually pitched well here over the last couple of games. But let's see them win a series in Miami to kind of get themselves back on good footing. But the Mets have been a disaster, and that's no surprise there. But the games heading into the weekend, Pittsburgh at Chicago, eh. Washington at Philly, as Philly has the most wins in the sport. Who would have thought that as you're in the middle of May? White Sox at the Yankees, that's going to be a bludgeoning as the Yankees will continue to roll there. Seattle at Baltimore, okay. Tampa at Toronto as they try to find their way. Minnesota at Cleveland, that's a series that's not really sexy, but with two teams that are fighting in the AL Central, San Diego at Atlanta, who San Diego's played a little bit better. Then you have Milwaukee at Houston, okay, but again, the Astros have been pitiful. Boston at St. Louis for old time's sake. Detroit at Arizona, Cincy at LA, and Colorado, San Francisco, and there's a couple other matchups that I left on the board, but that's your baseball. Let's see what comes out of the weekend and what we'll talk about there on Monday. And then lastly, as I wrap up the Preakness, this Saturday, which good for the Preakness on two ways. I said this Monday how I thought it wasn't good for Mystic Dan, who won the Derby, to be a part of the Preakness. I said it's not a good thing, it's a great thing. Well, now you have a scenario where the favorite, Muth, has been scratched because his fever is spiked. And the field of horses that are running, there are only 8 horses. And I get it, that's usually the case when you get to the Belmont, especially when you have a scenario where there's not a Triple Crown at stake. But 8 horses? They couldn't get 10 horses here? I wonder if they're setting this up for Mystic Dan to win. Now, that's not to say that Muth may be sick and may have a fever. I get it. Understood. But now you have to wonder whether or not they're setting this up to have Mystic Dan win in order for them to be some buzz and some drama heading into the Belmont Stakes in 3 weeks to where we could have a Triple Crown threat. That's how I'm looking at it, because I understand we've seen 8 horse fields in the past, but when you have the favorite go out and now you couldn't even get 10 horses, I think 10 would be fine. And who am I to say? I'm not a horse racing aficionado in the least, but to have 8 horses there and then you have Mystic Dan, who I would think, I believe what I read, he was actually the second favorite here. Now, it's almost a no-win situation for him, because if he loses or is up the track, it's going to be a disaster. So let's see what's going to happen there Saturday around 10 to 7 to see whether or not Mystic Dan wins the second leg of the Triple Crown. And then if that's the case, all eyes will be focused on the Belmont there in the first Saturday in June. And we'll see. But I don't want to say this is fixed. I don't want to say this is now set up for Mystic Dan to fail. I mean, we would look at it right now as this is his race to win. But stranger things have happened. You know, it's not as if this horse was a 4-1 favorite going into the race. And I don't even know what his odds were. I know Muth was 8-5. That just goes to show you how much of a favorite he was going into this race. And now he will not participate. So, Mystic Dan, it's all on you to take us home here to win these first two races. You've already won the Derby. Now let's see you win the Preakness. And if you don't, it's almost going to be frowned upon. You're going to need to have another photo finish similar to what we saw at the Derby. And if he loses, then we can say, all right, well, he gave it his all and lost. He cannot fall 8-9 lengths back in the track and really not show out here to the point where there'll be a lot of moans and groans wondering whether or not Mystic Dan had it in him to win this race, even though it seems like, as of right this second, it's set up to be that way. So, you know, I'll keep my eyes on that. And that'll do it, my good people. Another episode in the books. Thank you so much for stopping by. Thank you so much for carving out precious time out of your day to listen to what it is I have to say about what goes on in the world of sports. If you haven't done so, please subscribe, rate, and review. You know the deal. Apple, Spotify, my website, jreels.com. Wherever you listen to your podcast, please, people, let's increase the visibility. Also, my YouTube channel. I'm posting another, in the process of editing, another vlog, which will come up on Sunday, which I got to get to work on. I just started it, and it's going to be a big one, people. It will be big. It's sports related. It's not a lifestyle one, but it's one that you certainly will not want to miss. And it's coming from the heart. It's coming from yours truly. And there's a lot of truth in it. That is my teaser. On YouTube at JReels. If you want to hit me up with a question, comment, suggestion, Twitter, X, JReels1, just a number, Instagram, TikTok, Facebook, the JReels podcast. And the old-fashioned way, the JReels podcast at gmail.com. I'll be more than happy to follow up with you guys and gals, because whether you do or do not know, this is what I love to do, people. This is why I took the leap to do this full time. This is why I need your support. This is why I need for you to get the word out to your family, friends, frenemies, foes, whomever it may be. I don't care. If they love sports, have them tune in. If they want a little lifestyle about what goes on behind the scenes, not only with the podcast, but life, etc. Considering I've been on this planet for 55 years, not that I know it all, by far I do not, but I've got some gems and some nuggets to share to make this world a better place. Go to the channel at JReels on YouTube and you'll get a wide scope as I continue to build that channel, that platform, etc. Because each and every time I get in front of this microphone into your earbuds, headphones, or speakers, I will deliver nothing but fire, passion, fury, energy with my thoughts, opinions, critiques, praise, analysis, feelings on anything and everything that happens on the world of the diamond, ice, gridiron, hardwood, golf course, racetrack, tennis court, boxing ring, octagon, you name it. From my lips to your ears, from my heart to your soul, from where I am to wherever you are, the JReels podcast always comes correct, direct, and in full effect. From the South Bronx, the South Beach, the South Central, the South Pacific, and all points beyond, peace, love, and God bless everybody. And until next time on the JReels podcast, on the flip, baby.